Welcome to another episode of Social PR Secrets. My name is Lisa Beyer and I will be your host. Well, 2021 is almost a wrap. And with that, today's episode is going to focus on the top 10 episodes, according to you, the most popular episodes of 2021. And also I picked out three of my favorites that will prepare you for 2022. So how do we sum up 2021? Well, as I record this, I am quarantined with my husband and my daughter in Jupiter, Florida. Things did not quite turn out like we thought this week, just like 2021. We had plans to travel to Cincinnati to see family. We had plans to travel to Chicago. We had plans to hang out on our boat and go fishing every day. And none of that happened because all of a sudden we have some COVID going around. So we're all quarantined. But like I said, things did not quite turn out like we thought this week, just like 2021. 2021 seemed like it started out in survival mode. We were raw and a little shaken and stirred. And the beginning of 2021, we were ready to move forward. And then things kind of went sideways, then backwards. Then we had blinders on, it seems like. Then we had our head in the sand, or some of us did. Then we wanted to rip our masks off, or some of us did. Then we wanted to travel. I think everybody did. We wanted to hug and hold our family. And we all seemed to suffer burnout at some point and fatigue. So with that, here's a recap of the most popular social PR secrets according to analytics and you, the ones that you like the best. And some of these episodes talk about things like burnout, but also some of these episodes talk about topics around public relations, digital marketing, entrepreneurship, and things that, in my opinion, mattered most in 2021. Business still had to move forward. So like I said, it's a recap of the most popular episodes and then a few of my favorites to prepare you for what you need to do in 2022. So with that, let's listen up. So one of the most popular episodes this year was when I interviewed Megan Foster, and we talked about how to pitch e-commerce editors. Megan is a former e-com editor with The Today Show, and we talked about tips on pitching media outlets. And Megan says things like, when pitching to a publication, you can pitch to any type of writer or editor, no matter how influential. That being said, she used to receive over 200 pitches a day. So she gave a couple of suggestions on how do you make your pitch stand out. Editors and journalists are receiving more than 200 pitches a day. So one thing that I think is very critical is your subject line. So making sure that your subject line, it needs to be to the point. It needs to something that is going to make them click through and actually open your email and read more details. So paying attention to optimizing your subject line is one of Megan's pitches that I really loved. It seems so simple, but it's those very simple things that make all the difference. Number two and number three, she offered this advice on using images in your pitches. And her third tip is the 20-second rule. So this is all the most important information in your pitch needs to be at the very top. This is actually something that I go over in my course in almost every one of the modules, is making sure that you're thinking in along the lines of the inverted pyramid. So you want to have your most important information at the very top, and you're going to end with your least important information. Less is more when it comes to pitching.
So I worked with this awesome editor over at Today, and he was great at scouring the internet for the trending items on the market, whether that be on social media and what the young kids were buying, or looking into tabloids and seeing what celebrities were wearing and kind of using those to fuel what people's buying habits might be. And so I think it's really important to look into that, both as an editor and a writer, and as somebody who is working on the publisher or the brand site as well.
So would you say that that would be maybe an example of if you're on the PR side or on the brand side and you're looking for trends, kind of mirroring what the editor used as the example of how that editor was spotting trends. So that would be some way that we could kind of supplement and work together.
Exactly. So with the things I'm saying here and why I think this is important from understanding this from an editor's side is because as somebody who works in PR, you should be trying to think like the editor. Just like if I'm looking for a new product, I need to think as the the person working in PR. I need to think like the person working for a brand. So you need to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So think about, you know, what sorts of approaches that the editor is using. Go to the websites of the publisher, see what they're writing about, try to see a pattern somewhere. And, you know, my advice is if they are writing about things that are, you know, in the $10 to $50 range, don't come and pitch a $2,000 product, because no matter how cool it is, like, we need to prioritize what our audience is looking for. And while we'd like to help you out, that's can't always be the case. We have to make sure that, you know, we are prioritizing that trust and that honesty with our audience, because when it comes down to it, although we are part salesperson and part editor, the editorial part is way more important than generating revenue, because that was what was established first. You know, people are moving into e-commerce, but that does not mean that all of a sudden the numbers become more important. And so I think that's just like a really important thing to keep in mind, is that you don't want to lose the audience you already have from focusing so much on the sales. So from the PR perspective, and when you are pitching editors, make sure that there's that story component, make sure that you're not just focusing on numbers, but just be aware of the perspective from the editor as well.
And is every story isn't necessarily related to, you know, some sort of an affiliate relationship. Mm-hmm. There are just the pure editorial types mm-hmm. of stories that run. But it, you know, we were just talking before we started the interview recording, mm-hmm. just how things have changed so much in the past, you know, even, you know, 2 to 5 years, and how the lines are blurred between editorial and, you know, just say advertorial, or mm-hmm. the e-com side of things. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, because it's, you put it perfectly. How did you say it? That it's, we're not just doing the sales pitch, you know, and the advertising yeah. anymore. Mm-hmm. People are looking for, it really doesn't matter if it's sponsored content, as long as it's content yeah. that they really are interested in and care about. Yeah.
They want those genuine recommendations. You know, they, for example, I'm working for a woman right now, and she has had a following for 25 plus years and has built this following. And we are just now diving very deep into the affiliate relationships. And for those of you that don't know what affiliate is, an affiliate platform or an affiliate network, they're kind of like the middleman between the brand and the publisher. They help create this commission rate so that when a publisher does feature a product, they can earn a portion of the sales if that product is purchased from the site. So yeah, with the woman I'm working with right now, her audience is not used to seeing all these products featured. And that is very important to keep in mind. You want to make sure that you are being honest with your recommendations, that you are coming from the perspective of your audience. You know, you want to put yourself in their shoes and say, okay, like if I'm looking at this and all of a sudden there's no commerce content, and then all you're doing are gift guides, that's a red flag. You want to start by featuring just a couple products at once, or really disclosing it up front, so that there are no trust issues there.
Moving on to the next most popular episode, the title of this one is Modern PR Myths, Musts, and Mantras. And so in this episode, which was a solo episode, I talk about some of the PR myths that I have come to realize over the past 20 years. And one of those is how people compare digital public relations to digital advertising. And it can be slightly annoying to watch how almost all brands are willing to splurge if there's a budget on advertising, but few understand that digital PR is another central element of a successful business. Digital public relations is not something that you will get immediate results from, and it's something that needs to be almost compared to a business practice versus a campaign. So once you've understood that, digital PR will surprise you in more ways than one. Unlike advertising, PR positively affects every part of the funnel. And unlike advertising, PR offers sustained rewards over time, rewards that cannot be taken away. In short, PR gives brands what they cannot buy in ads. And this includes thought leadership, credibility, third-party endorsements, community, relationship building, impact, And many times with public relations, it can be a low budget or no budget is needed. It's something that can be done internally 2 to 3 hours a week to start out with, and then build upon that once the momentum gets going. I like to equate public relations to the law of attraction, where like attracts like. So once you get your first media hit of coverage, then it's a lot easier to get your next, and so on and so on. So for more info on PR myths, musts, and mantras, definitely tune into the episode. The link is in the show notes, and it's one that is a timeless episode that keeps on giving the wealth of public relations and how it is a priceless component of your business strategy. Next episode I'm going to highlight is the top 3R myths that are busted. So in this episode, we talk about PR myths, and the number one myth I'm going to share with you right now is that public relations is only measured in numbers. That is a myth. Public relations is measured, unlike advertising, in ways that are sometimes hard to define and sometimes considered a gray area, but it is a myth that you can measure PR only in numbers. Myth number two is only big companies do social listening. So this is far from the truth, and social listening or PR listening, something that can be easily brought into your public relations digital PR strategy. And you can do this by setting up alerts such as Google Alerts, or another free tool is called Talkwalker Alerts. And myth number three I'm going to share with you, the best PR pros live in LA or New York. So with the pandemic, this is shown and proven to be not accurate. Yes, there's great talent in LA and New York, but there's also great talent in smaller cities. And with the whole work from home, the whole work from home explosion that has happened, it's become easier and easier to show that you don't have to be in a big city, in a big, beautiful office on Madison Avenue to get qualified public relations professionals that will perform a return on investment. So you can be located anywhere. Your public relations talent can be located anywhere. And that doesn't mean it even has to be in the US. It can be across any time zone. Talent is talent, and it doesn't matter what city they're in. And I like to compare digital PR to the difference between digital PR and paid social or PPC is that businesses, they get very addicted to the immediate gratification that a paid campaign can give. And when a paid campaign is launched, you're controlling the creative, you're controlling the timing, you can see right away clicks, and you can see right away any type of ROI that you're expecting. And that's all great. You know, you just have to remember that when that campaign stops and when you stop funding that campaign, everything comes to a screeching halt. So the short answer to how long does it take to get results in PR? Well, it definitely takes typically longer than digital advertising, but the results are worth it. And they're sometimes priceless and more valuable than you could ever buy when it comes to digital advertising or PPC. So very similar to SEO, public relations is a long play. It's something that is always on, that you're always doing. It's a lifestyle. It's not a fad diet. It's not something you're going to try out and then stop and start. If you do that, it's not even worth investing any money or effort into public relations, because you're never going to really see the benefits of it. So PR is about relationship building with multimedia outlets, including Google, social media, influencers, bloggers, and traditional journalists. There's a place for all of these medias when it comes to PR. Just some reasons why PR will not work. Typically, there's unrealistic expectations. And when we're working with clients and when I'm doing presentations, this is something I try to talk about, so that the KPIs are realistic, the expectations are realistic, the budgets are realistic, the experience is in place, and that is something that definitely needs to be looked at, and that communication is on target. So PR is not a plug and play type of marketing activity. It's not something that you can assign to somebody internally and say, take it over and do it. And it's really not something that you can even assign to an agency and just let them go with it. It's not on autopilot. There needs to be engagement between the stakeholders of a brand and whoever is in charge of the PR. And the PR also has to be engaged with PPC, with SEO, with paid social, with organic social, so that everybody is on the same page. This is something that at least every week, I hear either if it's not from a client, I see it happening in some of my Facebook groups or just through peers. So never is a CMO or a CEO, they're never hesitant to say, let's spend another $100,000 this month on PPC or Facebook ads. That's usually no problem. But when it comes time to invest the resources to top tier influencers and PR, somehow they have no budget. Somehow they can't afford that. So it's super frustrating to see when stakeholders and C-suite and brands will say that public relations and SEO is important to their marketing efforts, but they don't want to dedicate any type of resources or budget to the efforts. So just keep in mind that PR organically functions just like search engine optimization. And search engine optimization, if you're not familiar with it, it is something similar to PR, where it's an always-on program. So you should have a monthly program dedicated to SEO, making sure that your website is healthy and that your channels are healthy and that you're building content and that you're in a healthy best practicing state when it comes to Google's best practices. So when done right and consistently over time, PR is like the gift that keeps on giving. So you're never going to be able to take away some of the earned media that you're going to get through your PR efforts. So that might be in the form of a review in the New York Times, or it might be in the form of pitching to be on a list of the best places to work, or it might be you're being interviewed by a podcast that your audience listens to. So once you get these types of results, as for example, a podcast interview, or you get listed on one of these lists, or you get a review from some sort of a journalist or a blogger or an influencer that is a third party type of endorsement, that's something that you're not going to get taken away from you and that you can always use in your future marketing. I'd like to know when you'd be able to use an ad that you've done in the past in your future marketing. Advertisements and social ads and PPC are not something that you can put in your portfolio or use as social proof. So keeping that in mind, that you really can't buy the results of a PR campaign. So let's look on the bright side of digital PR and what actually do you get from it? And this might be new, or this might be a brush up on public relations in general. So when I talk about PR, I'm talking about editorial coverage, earned media, typically not something that you can buy when it comes to advertising. Yes, you can amplify PR efforts and through content, and you can amplify your media coverage through paid campaigns. But when we're talking about earned media, these are some of the benefits that you can get and the basics when it comes to PR. So thought leadership, credibility, third-party endorsements, organic search results. Your PR is going to be impacting your page one of Google search engine results. That's something that, again, it's complementing your SEO efforts. You're able to build community. You're building relationships, impact, and typically, the budget from a PR campaign is not as big, and sometimes it's even, you don't have any budget. You can pitch the media from your in-house team, or even if you're the owner or a personal brand, you don't have to have an agency to do this. You can start making relationships with the media that matters. So PR can typically be done with low budget or no budget if needed. Next up, I'm going to focus on the episode that Lisa Beyer on life lessons, transitions, and resets. So this was a pivotal episode for me to record. And in this episode, I talked about how I really experienced extreme burnout and what I did about it. And at this point, I resigned from all of my clients earlier this year in May, something I never expected I would do. But it was the best decision I've ever made. Also talking about life lessons, highlights and lowlights of business and my personal life, some things that I wanted to share about mental health and awareness, red flags to business owners and what you should consider, and the key to happiness, which in my opinion is authentic self-expression. Part of the problem was me, I have to admit, because I have always been ahead with trends and with different applications of marketing, whether it be SEO with PR or social media with PR. Now it's virtual reality and augmented reality and marketing. And then being ahead has its disadvantages. And it's because there's a constant education process that you have to take with your team, your staff, and then also with your clients. So I was getting frustrated that I felt like everybody wanted to do the traditional PR, or everybody wanted to stay in the safe box, and nobody wanted to really do these innovative and modern strategies and tactics that I thought were going to be very beneficial when it came to ROI and results. So at this point, I decided, you know, I need to take myself off the front lines of all clients. And I literally just turned on my autoresponder one day. I said, I'm suffering from burnout. I'm out of the office until further notice. And in my mind, I was going to stay out of the office, or my autoresponder was going to stay on until I figured out what I was going to do. So what I ended up doing was going to a place for 10 days that specialized in, I'm going to call this entrepreneur burnout. And the place was called Canyon Ranch. I highly recommend it. It was really, you know, a lifesaver for me. And it's a place where people go. They'll go maybe for a weekend reset once a year. They have a spa, but they also have physical specialists and mental specialists, life management specialists, stress management specialists, grief and loss specialists. So it was amazing. And I am so glad that I ended up finding Canyon Ranch, and it really felt like chicken soup for the soul in a bubble. So for 10 days, I just lived in this like surreal world where I just shut myself off from the world. And I just really focused on, okay, Lisa, what is going on with you? How can you make your life less stressful, less, you know, not, you know, reverse burnout and find joy? So after coming back from Canyon Ranch, I really still didn't have all the answers, but I had clarity. I made space in my mind and my body. I felt healthy. I felt alive. I did not feel burned out. I just didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew that I had to do something. And I made a list of all my business assets, and I made a column for this one column had a smiley face, and then one column was for a frown face, and then a column of how much money I was currently making and the potential of the money I could make. And I listed all of my different business assets and then put either a smiley face or a frown face and the amount of money I'm currently making and then how much joy I'm getting from that asset. So different assets, including my agency, obviously. And then I had a couple podcasts like this one. I had launched Female Disruptors, which was a passion project I launched 2 years ago, an online magazine, noting the movement of women disrupting in their industry. So I had all these different, you know, assets that I had going on, and some of them I had no time for some months, and some of them were taking up all my time. So my agency, the buyer group, hands down was heading into my biggest year ever with current and new business. The problem is I was just hating every minute of dealing with the churn and extreme demands and in some ways dated marketing mindset of my clients and also the new business brands that were coming in. So fast forward a little bit, and less than 30 days from coming back from Canyon Ranch, it was obvious I had to cut the ties with the negatives and open up space for the positives. So this is what I ended up doing. I ended up giving all my clients 30 to 60 days notice. This was on May 1st, and letting them know I'm transitioning out of done-for-you services. And on June 30th was my last day working with clients. Well, sort of. So I'm changing my business model to focus on teaching and reaching thousands via my specialized online courses, which I'm really excited about. I'm going to focus on collaborating with other experts, with other agencies, joint ventures, affiliate marketing, writing books, and growing my other digital brands like Female Disruptors and my online other online assets like the podcast, Social Peer Secrets and Digital Detox Secrets. Both of these are named after my book, by the way. I just want to let you know, I don't hate my past clients. I am just not able to be at their mercy or really anyone's mercy anymore. It's a fact. And a couple of the experts that I worked with at Canyon Ranch that are specialists in working with entrepreneurs is I think out of the box, and not everyone gets me, and that's fine. But if I'm going to think out of the box, I really have to pick a direction where I'm going to be thinking out of the box and maybe sharing my out of the box strategies and ways of doing digital marketing and PR with those who really want to learn it. And so that's how I've decided to really focus on creating online courses and online workshops and, you know, providing personal workshops and in-person workshops and corporate training to those brands who really want to buy and learn what I'm expert in teaching. I also am very focused on authentic self-expression is the key to happiness. I mean, that was one of the things that I learned, that I really wasn't being authentic with my own self in order to really be happy in what I was doing. I was doing all the things that I thought I needed to be doing that I knew I was good at, but I didn't necessarily love. So I'm really focusing on my authentic self-expression and tapping into my creativity. And really my mantra is connecting and doing what brings me joy. And I know this sounds a little bit like, oh, what if I don't have the resources to do that? Or what if it's not the right time to do that? And, you know, I don't in any way suggest, you know, just ripping the Band-Aid off. Like I said earlier, this needs to be taken in possibly baby steps. And these baby steps are what is going to make the difference in a large change over the long run. The next episode, I interviewed Jean Jennings, and we talked about email marketing and how email should be part of every brand strategy. As a public relations agency owner, an email marketing strategy was really low on the totem pole. And I regret not building an email list and not having a focus on building my email list earlier in my career. Over the past 3 to 4 years, I've been focusing on building my email marketing list. And you may hear things like email is dead or email is making a comeback. Chances are you've heard both of these statements in the past few years. The truth is, email has always been a critical part of any PR and marketing strategy. So in this episode, we go over what you need to know about using email for your business, your agency, or your clients, and some email optimization tips from Jennings.
So you want to have a couple things. One is you want to have a sound value proposition. So, you know, if you just say, hey, we have email, nobody really needs another email, right? I don't. You probably don't.
Yeah.
But if you say, we have information that's going to help you do your job better, enjoy your hobby more, keep you up to date, you know, help your career, that's the kind of stuff that people are happy to receive. And so you want to make sure you've got that value proposition on the upfront. What are they going to get by signing up for this newsletter? The second key is really having that call to action above the fold on your website. There's been a trend in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years when web designers come in, it's fascinating to me. They say to people, so the email opt-in belongs in the footer. And what we've seen consistently is when you take that opt-in below the fold, you see a decrease in the percent of visitors that
I'm sure. Yeah.
I did a case study years ago, and just by moving the call to action above the fold, it was slightly below. We increased their signups by 30%, which is huge for most companies.
Yeah, so we just launched our website, and I'm going to have to check out and see where it's located, the opt-in. Probably it's below the fold, if not in the footer. So we're making mistake number one, but I'm going to fix it as soon as we finish with this interview. But so what would you suggest if it's not in the footer? Is it actually like part of the top of the fold, like part of the design is going to be the opt-in value proposition?
Exactly. A very traditional place for it is if you have a website that has a right rail or a right column, you mm-hmm. put it at the top of the right column. You can also put it at the very top of the email, maybe next to your logo. And it should appear on every page. That's another mistake a lot of companies make. With deep linking, you never really know where people are going to enter your site. So whether they enter on a blog page or on a product page or on the homepage, you want to make sure that that email call to action is right there. Because if they're interested enough to spend any time on your site, they're probably a great candidate to be an email newsletter subscriber for you.
What do you think about the pop-ups?
Personally or professionally or both?
Well, both. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do they work? Sometimes they're very annoying to me if it's an e-com site, you know, give us your email for 10% off. But I mean, do they work?
So from a personal standpoint, I find them incredibly annoying. Especially annoying to me are the ones that pop up before you've seen anything on the site and offer you a discount on products you're not aware of anymore in return to your email address. Because I don't really know if I want to buy anything there. And if I don't want to buy anything there, getting a 10% off discount doesn't help me. So personally, I'm not a fan of those. Professionally, yeah, they work really, really well. What I usually try to do with my clients is rather than have them pop up immediately, which does probably get you more names on the list, we hold it and we have it pop up later in the visit. So maybe on the second or third page they visit, maybe after X number of seconds, because we want to give you time to spend some time getting to know us before we go for that commitment. right?
It's I like that.
It's like that person who comes up to you and is like, hey, you want to get married? And you're like, whoa, man, like what about coffee first, right? So let them get to know you. And yeah, and you know, it's hard because I've worked with so many clients over the years who are like, I hate it. And then, you know, after 6 or 8 months, I'm like, you know, the only thing on the list that we haven't tried are pop-ups. And they go, okay. And we try it. And not that we haven't gotten incremental improvements with the other changes we've made, but that one tends to really, really boost response.
Next up is my episode featuring Mandy McEwen. She shares LinkedIn PR secrets for brands of any size. This is one of my favorite episodes. It poses the question, did the LinkedIn bubble burst? Not a chance. Mandy McEwen is the secret weapon for mastering the LinkedIn algorithm. She shows us how to optimize for your area of specialization and also maximizing exposure, engagement, and content strategy. So tune into this full episode. We're going to share some excerpts, but in the meantime, some tips from Mandy are always valuable. Follow her on LinkedIn, follow her on Twitter. She posts content every day that's helpful for every brand.
So I post daily on LinkedIn and I take that content and we repurpose it for every channel, Facebook, Twitter. So what we'll do is we'll take the tweets. And so if it's most of my posts on LinkedIn are longer than a sentence, you know, so we'll take a tweet and we will, you know, share the, if there's an image with the LinkedIn post, and then we'll put the link on Twitter back to the LinkedIn post. So it takes people back to my LinkedIn. You know, but they're still on Twitter. So they're still getting value on Twitter. But if they want more, they click through and the link that goes to my LinkedIn post. We post the exact same post on LinkedIn that we do on Facebook. So we have my Mod Girl Facebook, and then we have our Facebook group, Mod Agency Insiders. And so we share the same content. We just stagger it out. So we post on LinkedIn first. We wait an hour or so, post it on Facebook, and then same with Twitter. You know, so it's not all posted at the exact same time, but it's within 3 hours, you know? So we're leveraging, here's what we do too. We repurpose my long, actually most of them are long, LinkedIn posts to our blog. So every time I have a video or a helpful post on LinkedIn, a week later we go and we repost it on the blog. So I'm literally leveraging every single marketing channel for all my content, but my emphasis is on LinkedIn, but I can take that and I can repurpose it anywhere on any channel. So yeah. It's kind of a no-brainer not to do that, right? Because I have people on all these channels, not to mention the SEO aspect of sharing on your company blog. You know, you're already taking effort, time and effort and energy to write content or create content or make videos. You might as well post them on, you know, YouTube for videos, post the content on your blogs, post videos on your blogs. I mean, so I'm a huge fan of repurposing content and posting it everywhere.
I love that. That's really, really smart. Talk to us about LinkedIn Live. So what are some tips if someone's just getting started, which is me. So I just applied to get my LinkedIn Live credentials or whatever and awesome. Got approved. So I haven't nice. Done one myself yet. Uh-huh. So what are some tips that you can give me and everybody else listening?
Yes. I actually just got off of LinkedIn Live before I chatted with you here. So one is just the technology side of it. It's so different than Facebook. You can't just like hop on and click go. You have to have the right app. So make sure you know, when you get access, they'll give you a link and it'll show you, you know, what apps you can use for that. That's the only thing that's weird with it is like the Microsoft doesn't make it super easy, but once you have an app that does it, it's fine. It's very similar to Facebook, you know? So my tip is I personally started like a show, right? So I have my Ambitious Outcomes series. I was going live like once a week early last year. I changed it to once a month. And so people like when you have a certain theme, you know, so come up with like some sort of cadence and a theme that you talk about, right? And obviously you don't talk about the same exact thing every time, but guests do really well too. So I just had a guest on my show today, you know, so LinkedIn Live, it's awesome because again, it's building that human connection. So I'm all about humanizing brands and there's no better way to do that than to go live, you know, or do videos. But even with videos, like you can kind of rehearse them, you know, with live, like you're live, you know, there's no going back. So I love it because it really shows the personality behind people, right? But people are engaged if you're talking about topics that are hot, that they want to know more about. And so what we do is we promote the hell out of our LinkedIn lives, like the week of. So I go live on LinkedIn on one Thursday a month, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all my content mentions my LinkedIn live, you know, it's helpful content though. I'm not like join me on live, join me on LinkedIn live. You know, I'm not doing that every day, but I'm mentioning it and I'm weaving in my valuable content into the topic I'm talking about, you know, on Thursday. So you, it doesn't work as well if you just go live and don't tell anyone about it, you know? So it, which kind of is for every platform, but so promote it ahead of time and figure out what your audience wants. So do a poll, actually. This is a good tip. LinkedIn polls are crushing it, by the way. Two types of posts that are crushing it right now on LinkedIn that the algorithm loves. First one is polls. Second one is those PDF carousel posts where you can upload a PDF and then you swipe through and like slide, you know, it's kind of like in a slideshow format. Those are crushing it too. So those are two things that are working really well in terms of what the algorithm loves and how many views people are getting on them. So what you want to do is if you're just starting out on LinkedIn Live, do a poll. Ask people what, you know, what they want to hear most about you or what they want to learn more about your particular topics of expertise. Give them four or five options and see what they say. And then just keep surveying kind of your audience and write some posts about it and just kind of get a feel for what exactly they would want you to talk about before you do it. So you know that it's actually something that people want to show up for and listen to you talk about. Okay.
In this next episode, I interview Bruce Clay. Bruce Clay is known as the father of SEO. We talk about all topics, including hiring SEO specialists, what in the world are link mentions, and are they important? SEO stands for search engine optimization. And in this episode, we talk about the relationship between SEO and press releases and public relations. We also talk about authoritative links, organic and blue links, nofollow links, pay-per-click, and Google Ads. So tune into this episode for a deep dive into SEO in 2021 and what to expect in 2022.
It turns out that SEO over time has evolved to where there's specialties within SEO. You may be absolutely wonderful at diagnostics and analytics and determining what the problem is, but somebody else might be absolutely great at seeing the problem. And another person might be great at on-page, and another person might be great at servers, and another person, their specialties evolving. So you kind of need to have somebody on staff that knows what the true skill set should be, mm-hmm. and to ask questions that you can get an answer and you can say, yes, you know what mm-hmm. that is. Now, is anybody going to know it all? Well, I've been doing it for 25 years. I can tell you, no, nobody knows it all. True. You know a lot. You have seen a lot. You have experimented and touched and kicked and you know, fallen down and gotten up, and you've learned a lot. But there are things that are evolving this week that I haven't seen yet. Yeah. I'm fond of saying every Monday it's a new industry.
Yeah. Right. I mean, is it fair to say that SEO is both art and science?
Yes, it is both art and science. And it's a little bit like medicine, right? Now, one of the things that is true is at no time do you ever throw out 100% of your SEO. 5% may have changed, so you learn it. And then a different 5% next week, so you learn it. So you're always able to understand it. But if it were an industry where overnight it was all obsoleted, it's a new industry. Expertise doesn't matter. I mean, you might be good at problem solving, or you might have excellent written and verbal skills to communicate, right? But overall, SEO is pretty consistent, especially at the best practice level. And then you have to fill in the gaps that are being changed on a regular basis. How do you hire somebody? Wow. I mean, you have to understand the role. You have to ask the questions. You have to know, I think, some of the precursor questions. Like if I ask this and they know what it is, there's a good chance that they could figure out the rest, even if they didn't know it. Because you cannot ever hire somebody that only knows what's in the box and expect them to succeed in the future. Not with digital marketing, not with SEO, not with PR, not with social, not with anything. What you need is a person that pretty much understands there is no box, right? Sort of like the Matrix, right? It's not a spoon. And you have to understand that what you think is happening may not be what's happening. And you can't have a predetermined disposition towards, no, if I see that, that's exactly what it is, because it may not be. Now, how do you hire that person? That's your question. And your best bet is to find somebody that has a moderate amount of experience, that does know and seemingly can communicate on things that are common to the industry, right? They have to read the right periodicals, right? They have to consider it a career and not a job. There's so many little things. And are they a problem solver, right? I refer to SEO as what we do for a living is solve puzzles, right?
True.
We're juggling Rubik's cubes, trying to solve them in midair while the colors are changing. That is a career to die for if you're a problem solver. If you really, really like getting in and figuring it out, this is a perfect career. But you will run into people who just want to put in their 8 hours and disappear, and they don't spend any time staying current. You know, when's the last time you read a blog? What are your top blogs? And they can't name them. Or, you know, do you go to conferences? They don't. What is it that you do to stay current, right? If they can't answer that intelligently, it doesn't matter what your other questions are.
Yeah, right? I agree.
The next most popular Social PR Secrets episode is titled 10 PR Secrets to Boost Exposure, Energy, Sleep, and Save Time. In this episode, I talk about my favorite things on the metaverse, including AI for designers, a repurposing secret tool that I love, Adweek's Metaverse Marketing Podcast that just dropped this year, hosted by Kathy Hackle, and A Brand's Guide to the Metaverse by Alan Smith. I also talk about public relations secrets and digital detox secrets for energy and for women. So this is a really alarming stat that was reported in 2020, that stress in America. The survey said that 84% of adults reported feeling at least one emotion associated with prolonged stress in the prior 2 weeks. So that's what the pandemic served us up. And in 2021, we saw things kind of fall apart and get put back together. So focusing on your energy and on sleep is super important from a business standpoint and to be your best self. In this episode, I talk about some of my favorite sources, including Qigong Classes by Lee Holden and a new book called Crushing My Beast. The author of this book talks about how he has been sober since February 12th of 2021, and he shares his journey on LinkedIn, where he currently has 18,000 followers. So the founder of Sober Stitch and author, his name is Chris Moran, and he just published Crushing My Beast. I recommend checking that out and checking out the full episode. So first off, you know, artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, the metaverse, these are all techie buzzwords that are getting real when it comes to marketing and also public relations and branding and business in general. So looking at artificial intelligence for designers, and if you're wondering, I mean, this has been happening to me since forever with clients where we get photos that are really low quality photos. And what we really need are high quality photos, high resolution photos. So there's an app for that. It's called AI Let's Enhance. And what it does, amongst other very cool things, is it can turn your low res images into high res images. It can remove backgrounds. It can remove fix photo bombs from any image and turn any image actually into a website. So it's totally cool. So check out Let's Enhance, and the link will be in the show notes. My next favorite thing when it comes to AI is another tool that is called Synthesia. And thank you, Dennis Yu, for shouting out this idea for an app. I joined Dennis on a Clubhouse interview a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about all of the tips and tricks when it comes to repurposing content. And if you're in the PR world or in the marketing world, you know how valuable it is to or you can even think of how valuable it could be to repurpose content and make your job easier from very high quality content, such as a podcast, and taking that and slicing it, dicing it into eBooks and into all different types of content. So zeroing in on Synthesia. Synthesia allows you to create artificial intelligence video and also create a custom avatar. So wouldn't that be cool to create a custom avatar that's actually doing some of the spokesperson talking for you? So with that, check out synthesio.io. Another repurpose secret tool I want to let you guys know about, if you don't already know, is called Designer. So Designer is super cool. It allows you to turn podcasts or even your top performing blog posts into eBooks or newsletters, saving you a great deal of time and helping you take that super high performing content and turning it into other types of content. Moving on to the metaverse and some new podcasts and guides. So you've probably heard me talk about the metaverse in the past, and also Kathy Hackle. So those two words kind of go hand in hand, Kathy Hackle and the metaverse, especially when it comes to the metaverse and marketing. So Kathy just recently launched her podcast partnering with Adweek called the Metaverse Marketing, Adweek Metaverse Marketing. So I highly recommend you tune into this podcast. It's Adweek's Metaverse Marketing podcast. It just launched about a month ago, and Kathy covers all kinds of topics that are related that brands need to know when it comes to advertising, marketing, and also public relations. So definitely check out Kathy's latest podcast. Speaking of brands and branding, now we have A Brand's Guide to the Metaverse by Alan Smithson. So I've been following Alan on LinkedIn for about the past year. He is another metaverse expert. So I put the link to Alan's Brand's Guide to the Metaverse in the show notes. Definitely check that out. You will learn so much. It's definitely, you won't feel like you don't know enough to read it. It's a great starting point if you don't know anything about the metaverse and you want to learn how you can integrate the metaverse into your branding and marketing. The next most popular episode on Social PR Secrets, I interviewed Cassie Mueller. Together, Cassie and I attended PubCon, and that was the first in-person event that I went to in 2021. It was small. It was at a weird time in August when the pandemic was heating up again. Not that it never. It was a weird time in 2021. It was when cases of COVID were on the rise and right when everybody thought it was okay to attend in-person events and start traveling again, there was a slight setback. So it was a small conference. I'm glad I went. I was able to see people for the first time face-to-face since before the pandemic. And in this episode, Cassie and I talk about expertise, authority, and trust. We talk about the neuroscience marketing and what that has to do with ad copy. We talk about how PR and ad budget has changed during COVID, the chain of communication, keywords and hashtags for organic exposure, and the social proof and what it means when it comes to testimonials. So check out in the show notes the link to this episode, and I highly recommend listening to the full episode. It's timeless and definitely is still very relevant as we enter 2022. My biggest kind of takeaway from PubCon was Lily, because she was one of the keynotes. So her name is Lily Ray, and she works for a company. I'm trying to look up. It's called AMSIVE. It's a digital agency. So she did a keynote and she talked about EAT. So expertise, authority, trust is part of something to be aware of that Google is really looking at when it comes to influencing Google and Google search results when it comes to websites. And I just loved hearing everything that she had to say and how you can really tie in together how public relations can influence the expertise, authority, and trust components of content on a website. And it just underlines why PR and SEO really go hand in hand. So I felt like Lily's points, and we'll put in some of the, I can give an exact example of like one easy thing to do that website owners can do, or you can look at your website and see if you have it. And that would be for your blog on your website, the author should have its own author's page. and have the credentials to really be writing about that topic. So for example, we see out all the time, Cassie, I'm sure you do too, blog articles that say the author is, let's say, admin, or let's say the blog author is, you know, just Sue. Like there's no link to who Sue is. We don't know if Sue even exists. There's not a last name. So really what Google's looking for when it comes to websites is they want to know that the authors of the content, that they're authoritative experts in that topic. And if they are, great, that's going to help you get more exposure from Google. But if they're not, Google's going to second guess the authority, the expertise, and whether or not this is an expert or not. Like, should this be something that's credible without all the fake news that's happening? And, you know, if they can't see that it is credible and that it is expert and it is authoritative, then that is going to actually work against you and your website search results with Google.
That sounds awesome. I wish I actually attended that one.
Yes. And I know from the projects we've worked on together, Cassie, that this has come up with the EAT and expertise, authoritativeness and trustworthiness. And it's a battle because it's asking webmasters to maybe change themes or change programs or add pages. And it's, you know, you have to kind of make that case, right?
Definitely. And it's extra work, you know, when you have to add the bio, the link, the headshot, but it makes a big difference.
What was a session that really stands out to you and a topic, and what did you learn?
Yeah. So one of my favorites was actually from day one. So that was the workshop sessions. And we spent like 3 hours in the neuroscience marketing. And that was Roger Dooley's session. And basically, you know, it really opened my mind up to why we do a lot of the things we already do and how we can phrase certain ad copy and certain marketing pieces to really appeal to, you know, the hierarchy of needs. Like one of the things he brought up was the liking principle. And an example of that is Tito's, like Tito's being vodka for dog people. You know, it's not really excluding people if you don't like dogs, you know, it's Tito's, but the fact is it's pulling people in who, you know, do love dogs. And Tito's sells, you know, dog bandanas, dog shirts, and it's just great marketing overall because they're really hinting and using that liking principle. And then it went even further, like further than liking principle would be the unity principle, where it's basically, he said, liking on steroids. So it really has a sense of belonging. So an example of that would be, you know, at my undergrad, I went to FSU. So FSU is the Seminoles. And a lot of times if I see a business is owned by, you know, a Seminole, or, you know, in Fort Lauderdale, there's an FSU bar, we're all likely to, you know, keep frequenting it and purchasing from them and supporting them because we feel like we belong and we're part of that community.
Yes, I like that a lot. I've seen Roger speak a bunch of times, and the whole neuroscience thing is definitely fascinating. And I think that every marketer should and every brand owner should read something about neuroscience and marketing. So that is such a valuable insight, I believe.
Definitely. And even comes down to the colors, you know, the certain colors you use are already giving you, you know, a sense of security or a sense of danger. And it just breaks down so far and so deep. So it was very informative. And I think I could even read and learn more about it.
Definitely. Definitely. My next most popular episode is when I interviewed Adam Risberger. So Adam and I worked together for the past few years on several accounts when it comes to Facebook advertising and strategy. He is a former Facebook employee, and he reveals how to beat the ad algorithm on Facebook. So some of the topics we discuss in this episode include Facebook ads, the Facebook pixel, video ads, and website optimization.
Facebook is very different now compared to, you know, back in 2012. It just more or less just started with ads the year before I came on. There was no mobile app, nothing like that. So there wasn't a lot of structure, as you can assume for, you know, it's a fast growing startup, but they had on papers some training, but was more or less up to your, you know, you have to go in and just read documents and learn things and learn about the algorithm, which is like very different today compared to back then. But it was a lot of like self-learning back then.
Yeah, it was before Business Manager, that's for sure.
Oh yeah,
right?
Oh yeah. The years before. Back then it was, everything was done in Salesforce. It was a really hacky connection they had with Salesforce, and you have to ask days in advance to get ad accounts. It was the Wild West when it comes to Facebook advertising back then, for sure.
Yeah.
I remember that actually when I think it was right around 2010, 2011 that I was also, everybody was having to teach themselves any type of Facebook advertising strategies. And I was using it as a way to put a layer on top of our PR activities and part of the PR strategy. So I started using it for my clients from that point of view. And then I started also just learning it. And then I taught a couple workshops and courses on Facebook advertising right around 2010, 2011, 2012. And then it just started to get so complicated that, you know, I was definitely not the best person to be teaching Facebook advertising, but I've been basically on the platform from an ad standpoint since day one. And so much has changed, and it's you know, how brands really need to continually stay on top of those changes, because if you take 1 year off and not pay attention, you're doing last year's best practices. You're kind of screwed.
I always say that Facebook is like dog years, like one human year is 7 years in Facebook years. So, and like back then in the early days, you know, 2013, 14, you could basically set up anything you wanted, like it would work. CPM was so cheap. People were like new to Facebook ads. So it was much easier to kind of get going fast and get results fast. And then around like 2014, 15, that's when things got more complicated. They started with looking more into like data using the Facebook pixel and so forth. So it definitely got more complex and also more crowded, more advertisers, you know, has obviously come onto the platform. So back then you didn't really compete with that many advertisers. And today you compete with thousands every day. So that's that, I say that's the biggest challenge, actually, if you look at today versus a couple of years back.
I mean, I can remember when it was a thing to buy likes and get, you know, likes on your page and follows, and that was important, and that who had more likes, you know, which brand had the most likes if you're comparing yourself to the competition. And now I used to think it was good to have the likes if, as long as they were a qualified audience, because then you could go and retarget them. Does that even matter anymore? Do you even need to have an established Facebook page?
So back then people definitely, they would visit the Facebook page more often than today. And you would have likes as more, you know, quality metric. Today, especially when you talk about ads and performance ads, like people don't really click on your Facebook page. So it doesn't really matter. And most people don't really care about Facebook likes so much right now compared to before. And a funny thing, actually, my presentation when doing the first interview at Facebook was actually a case to get more likes. So back then you can only buy likes to start with, likes and traffic basically. So the pixel, the more kind of conversion focused ads didn't come until around 2013-ish.
And finally, the 10th most popular episode, I interviewed Brandon Smits. We talk about the art of persuasion, the offer, and the experience. In this episode, Brandon shares with us his secrets in creating content that creates emotion. We talk about organic and paid search. We talk about social media as an organic approach. And most importantly, the art of persuasion. So tune into this episode and hear the full interview with Brandon Smits as you prepare for 2022.
So I think organic has changed in the past few years pretty rapidly. Increasingly, platform-based, like social media organic, is on the rise. If you've built a brand on social media over time, whether that's your personal IG account or a business account that is very deeply interwoven and sort of a platform native type approach that people are relating to your content and beginning conversations with you, it's become a very, very powerful acceleration experience that people get when they find a brand who really just sort of knows them without ever having met them before. And I think the awareness piece of marketing is still as important as it ever was. And if you're in the coaching or the marketing space looking to attract new clients, it's even more important because there's so many people out there doing what you do. So your ability to resonate and give people an emotional experience or just getting people to emote with content ends up being very important in the persuasion process of getting them to investigate working with you.
And where do you start when it comes to that with the content that actually creates emotion and resonates with the brand? And what are some maybe some do's and don'ts that you see that are working and aren't working?
Sure. So I feel the people who struggle the most to get the ball rolling on this type of thing often have not gone back to the basics of understanding who their audience is. What are the various versions of the marketing persona that are out there? And what is it that they want? This is the basics of persuasion. In order to persuade somebody to do anything, really, you need to make sure that it meets their best interest to get what they want, right? It's not about what we want or convincing them to do what we want. It's about how does what we do allow them to get what they want? And so I think the most basic thing to ask yourself when you're creating a piece of content or reviewing your entire social account is our content about us or is it about our prospect? Is it about our audience? And I would say more brands than ever are getting this right now, but you still see it. Everybody's sort of shouting into the abyss of like, oh, we were featured here. When really maybe they should be saying like, here's how we got featured and you can too.
Correct. Yeah. I think I read on your LinkedIn, I love this little quote that you had about how the best leads are the warmest leads and have the best ROI. And I feel like sometimes we, you know, working with my clients and also working even with my own brands, it's kind of like you're creating all this content and you can't really tell if it's working. And then all of a sudden somebody will be like, oh yeah, we love that the email that you put out, 21 things or something like that. And like, don't change it. And like, meanwhile, like inside the brand, you're not, because it's a warm, it kind of nurturing cycle, right? You're not really sure exactly where that's fitting in, but really it is fitting in. So like, how do you tell?
I think there's a data piece and there's a gut piece. I always look for that type of feedback. So that's obviously, you knew at that moment, you're like, well, that piece is working, right? And I think it also does validate that the channel is working, like that your email is working by itself because people are opening it to check it out, even if it's just once in a while. You know, looking at your email open rates and things like that is pretty important. I think if you look at the holistic buyer's journey that people go through, each phase has its own unique set of metrics. And, you know, without getting too technical, you want to ask yourself, like, do we have the right message for our persona at this phase? And how could we possibly tell whether we do or don't? And so, you know, email will give you open rates if you're using an automation tool. You know, maybe shares on social is a good one, or even just comments, people tagging other people in them. Like, that's a really good sign that it's very relatable enough to share, right?
I like that. Some bonuses that I wanted to share with you, some of my favorite and I think most important interviews that I recently did on Social PR Secrets that definitely, if you haven't listened and tuned in, I invite you to. So the number one bonus favorite of mine is my interview with Kathy Hackle. We did this interview live from NFT Basel earlier, actually in November of this year. And in this episode, we talk about the first metaverse agency of record, and that was obtained by Kathy at her agency. She closed the deal. And in this episode, we talk about what that means. So you've heard of advertising agency of record, marketing agency of record, PR agency of record, and now Kathy closed the first metaverse agency of record. So as we enter 2022, or whenever you're listening to this episode, I invite you to explore what a metaverse strategy means to your brand and what that should look like this year and in the future. We talk about the public relations metaverse and what brands and PR pros need to know and grow. We discuss decentralization and what that means and why it's important. And most important to me, we talk about women and NFTs, the opportunities, and why now is the time for women and females to get involved in this industry.
So right now, when we work with clients, we work with them on four different, let's say, services. One is virtual worlds. So thinking, you know, if they're a company that wants to create their own world in Roblox or create an island in Fortnite Creative or something like that, right? We help them with that. We also do consulting with NFT, with virtual fashion. So if they want to create a virtual fashion line or start to figure out, you know, if they're going to be doing something with avatars, maybe sometimes inside virtual worlds, maybe sometimes in augmented reality, but kind of talking through virtual fashion. Then we do some work with non-fungible tokens and NFTs, which is what we're here at the conference about. So we kind of, for example, helped co-develop the NFT strategy for Clinique. Clinique was the first brand in the Estee Lauder companies to do an NFT. So, you know, working with them to truly understand, you know, how can they focus on community? What is the true utility? And how do they launch an NFT as a brand that makes, you know, that makes sense and seems, you know, and is authentic. So we did that. And then we also, depending on the brand, we work with them on longer term or short-term metaverse strategies that might encompass some of these things or might encompass all of them or might add, you know, different elements that are, you know, that are not part of those services.
So being at this conference today with you, I told you, you know, it's all really starting to come together because I've been getting bits and pieces of NFT and Bitcoin and crypto. And so kind of like walk us through, like, I learned a lot today about, you know, now we're Web 3.0. Like, yeah. What is Web 3.0? And can we start at like Web 1.0 and go to Web 2.0 and where we are today?
Yeah. So when I explain kind of where we're heading, I always do it this way. I say Web 1.0 connected information and you got the internet. That changed a lot of things, right? Web 2.0 connected people and you got the sharing economy, you got e-commerce, you got social media. That changed a lot of things and, you know, new companies sprouted out, became juggernauts, new jobs became, you know, created like social media managers that we didn't used to have, right? So a lot of different things changed. Even PR as a field changed, right? From only, you know, placements and, you know, advertising equivalents or whatever those were called, it made the profession evolve. And in Web 3.0, you have pretty much connecting people, places, and things, or people, spaces, and assets. And sometimes these people, spaces, and assets can be in the physical world with some level of augmentation, or they can be in the virtual world, right, that could be fully immersive. It doesn't only have to be fully immersive. But at the end of the day, it is about convergence of physical and digital. You almost have to view it as your, like, physical lifestyle that you've been living on your phone and your computer, finally catching up to your physical lifestyle, right? And it's going to be a process. We're at the beginning, right? This is not something that's going to happen next year. It'll be a process. I always tell people it's within this next 10 years is that time that we're going to be building really heavily. So almost think of like the early 2000s for Web 2.0. That's kind of where we are right now in that era of, like, you know, potentially new hardware, potentially new companies, new roles, new jobs, all those sorts of things that are starting to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, I read, I think it was in the New York Times the other day, that IT departments are really, you know, not going to exist anymore. And it's so funny because in Web 2.0, that was like that's why we have IT departments. And something really, I had an aha moment in one of the sessions today about, you know, I've heard the term, I just really haven't paid that much attention to decentralization, right? And one of the speakers talked about how right now, well, in Web 1.0, we really were in an era of decentralization. Yeah. And Web 2.0 now, I think he said the term is 60% of what we're doing in Web 2.0 is controlled by Google, Facebook, and Apple, is it? We're not in a decentralized arena, but Web 3.0. So we're hoping for. So talk about that. Like, what does it mean?
So when we talk about, like, the vision of the metaverse that a lot of us want to see, it's open and decentralized. And what I mean by that is that there's very limited, or possibly none, but very limited walled gardens. So right now, if I go into Facebook, I can't really take what I'm doing to Facebook even, you know, to other platforms.
Right.
So it's like a walled garden. I can only do certain things there. It doesn't translate to other platforms. But when you're talking about decentralization, is the idea and the concept that, you know, some of these digital assets, so I said people, places, and things, right? Some of these virtual assets that you might own might have domain transportability, might be interoperable. I might be able to buy a Gucci dress in a world and be able to take it with me to a different world, or be able to wear it in augmented reality, but then be be able to put it on my avatar in the virtual world. So it's being able to kind of transport elements and also your identity, being able to bring it to a lot of different things. So instead of always, you know, logging into every place with a different password and a different email, eventually it's like your identity allows you to unlock access to all these different things. And it's, you know, it's you own your identity, you own your data, you're able to transport across different places. You're not, you know, I think people almost have to think about it like the age of extraction is over in some ways. It's slowly starting to die. The ad revenue models of the Web 2.0 world that created, you know, the juggernauts that are Google and Meta and more Facebook or whatever, and those, like, those things will probably not work in the same way in the Web 3.0 world.
The next favorite episode that I would invite you to tune into is when I discuss the Female Disruptors Virtual Summit. I announced that in December, and the event is coming up in January of 2022. So for the summit, it's happening on January 19th, 2022. We're going to have a special VIP day on January 18th that I will be announcing in a couple weeks. Some of the Female Disruptors featured keynotes include Rhonda Britton. She is an Emmy Award winner, a repeat Oprah guest, a TEDx speaker, and she is going to talk about fearless living. Katie Wells, she is best known as Wellness Mama, and she is going to talk about entrepreneurship, mompreneurship, and secrets to starting and monetizing a successful podcast and blog. Kathy Hackle is going to be one of the keynotes, as seen on 60 Minutes, Time, Vogue, Bloomberg, and more. Kathy is known as the godmother of the metaverse. So far in this episode, I've talked about the father of SEO and now the godmother of the metaverse, Kathy Hackle. So Kathy is going to be one of the keynote speakers at the Female Disruptors Virtual Summit, and I hope to see you there. Along with I, Addison, she is the education disruptor and founder of the Disruptors Planner, and she is going to teach us and share with us at the Female Disruptors Virtual Summit how to be a disruptor and how to use a planner to do it. Last but not least, one of the female disruptors featured keynotes is Whitney Freya. So Whitney is an inspired living expert. She is an artist and author, and she helps businesswomen discover their personal magic. I interviewed Whitney earlier this year. She's actually another episode that you should check out. My daughter and I took her course called 22 Days of Painting and Meditation. And it was actually the inspiration from this course that we came up with the concept of female Buddha as the concept NFT, the concept of the NFT that we're going to be launching and announcing in January. So more on that soon. But in the meantime, check out the episode or check out femaledisruptors.com. So Female Disruptors was a little passion project of mine that I started a couple years ago. And it was after the whole Me Too movement disruption that happened that really started to get me annoyed and thinking that females just don't get the spotlight in a positive way as much as they should. We are, I think, underserved when it comes to positive exposure and lifting us up versus men. And we got some really negative, even though the Me Too movement did bring a lot of recognition and awareness to what females and women have been going through and suffering from with discrimination, sexual harassment, sexual assault, men in power not giving women the fair chance they need for and using the right system versus their power and greed and sexual interest. So anyway, fast forward, I was taking a yoga class and just kind of this was running through my head. And I said, you know, I want to come up with some sort of a publication, an outlet to spotlight women. So I came up with the name Female Disruptors. It kind of just came to me during a yoga class. And I couldn't wait till the class ended to go see if the domain existed. I went to GoDaddy, looked it up, and femaledisruptors.com was available, both ways to spelling it with an ORS and an ERS. So I bought them both. And I remember calling Nava and saying, what are we going to do with this? We have to do something big. So we started working on it. I started working on it. And I think that was November. And by February, March of 2019, Female Disruptors, the online publication was launched, and we launched featuring about five different females. One of them being Charlene Lee, who was actually my first female disruptor that I ever met in my early career. She was a keynote speaker, and I just remember she was a woman in a men's world of internet marketing and technology, and she was a keynote, and she's inspired me so much. So I reached out to her. She's a really big name, and I said, you know, I'm just going to give this a shot. And I was connected with her on LinkedIn, and I said, hey, Charlene, will you be the first that I can interview for my Female Disruptors publication? You were my first female disruptor that I ever met. And she was honored and gave me the interview. So fast forward to today, Female Disruptors, we've interviewed probably 50 or 60 women, spotlighting them for them disrupting, whether it's in marketing or technology or mental health, their industry, or even parenthood. And earlier this year, if you heard one of my earlier episodes, you probably heard how I was an early to join the Great Resignation before there even was the coined term Great Resignation. I resigned from all my clients. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew I wanted to do something that was bringing me more joy and happiness. And I wanted to give up the agency world and be able to pursue my passion, one of them being growing the brand Female Disruptors to the next level. So that's what I've been working on behind the scenes of all of these interviews with Social PR Secrets that you're hearing and Digital Detox Secrets, and also been building my course, Modern PR Secrets. But I've also been working on this idea of a virtual summit where I'm bringing together the female disruptors that we've interviewed in the past and curated a group of women that I believe are going to really together be able to collaborate and cultivate and bring their inspiration, their success, their stories, and their actionable tips to future female disruptors. So very excited to announce that this is a reality. I'm very humbled that literally not one person I reached out to said no. Everybody that I personally invited said yes right away, including some of the sponsors. So some of the early sponsors are Goat Social. Thank you so much, Cassie Mueller, and Ashley with Storytime, her group in the UK. They are helping with the copywriting, and we have a couple other big sponsors in the works. So say a small prayer for me and a silent meditation that some of these sponsors come through, because I'm doing this on a small budget. It's my own money I'm putting into it, and it's a lot of time and effort. My next favorite episode that I wanted to make sure that I noted was my interview with Pascal Dubé. And she talks about how communication secrets to coach parents with teens and how communication is the key to success when it comes to parenting. We talk about how Pascal started her career early as an executive coach and switched gears to have a more meaningful and purposeful career coaching parents of teens. She also shares tips on how she marketed herself as a coach and how she switched gears and some of the things that she's using to promote and grow her brand. She also talks about tips on parenting of teens and how communication is the currency to success when it comes to parenting with teens. More details are in the episode, and I invite you to listen in.
But there are basics that come with communicating with your teenager that you have to rely on trust. Trust is the most important currency between you and your teenager. And unfortunately, when it comes a time as you're a teenager, you try to detach from your parent, and sometimes it can create mistrust or distrust between the parent and the child. Usually those things kind of work themselves out. But if you can manage to go throughout the adolescence of your kid and go through it with keeping this trusting bond, you're going to be okay.
But how do you do that? That's hard.
Very hard. It's very, well, it can be easy for some people have it more easy. You know, communication is a skill. It's a learned skill. That's why coaching may come handy if you feel like you're lacking. But ironically, I found that some of the problems that arise between parents and children, they're kind of the same communications issue that I faced with managers and their teams. So there's this person that's responsible for the well-being of these other people. What we have lost sight of, I think, as a species or as a society, are what I call the five pillars of good communications. So the first thing you have to make sure is when you communicate with your teenager, you have to be in control of your emotional state. You have to make sure that your emotional state is the right one. And you have to make sure that the emotional state of your kid, that they're not distracted, that, you know, they're fully present, that you are fully present. Of course, you can't control totally what their attitude is going to be, but if you can control and manage your own emotional state, which is also a skill, then you set up the basics of a good conversation or a good communication. The second thing, and I just discussed a bit about that, is communication is a lot more about listening and observing than it is about talking. And sometimes when we are with our teenagers or when we're discussing, even with our partner, if we're in an argument or something is getting heated, we tend to fall back on not listening, but trying to find a comeback. So we're not fully present. We're trying to find a way to reassess control or to be right. So we are trying to find for an argument to counter what the other person is saying instead of fully observing and fully absorbing the information that is provided to us by the person that we're talking to. So this is the second thing, listening. The third thing, and I think this is can be wrapped up in empathy, if you will, is to be conscious that first your teenager is going through all of these things. You're not even aware of everything that they're going through, but they're going through a lot of things. And if you look back in your own experience and you remember what it was to be a teenager, it was confusing, it was stressful, it was anxiety inducing. And we don't even talk about, you know, social media. We didn't have it and it was still stressful. So you can imagine what type of pressure they're under. So try to remember that the person in front of you, their reality is very different from your own. And when you are trying to have a conversation, to have communication with them, you bring your own reality on the table and they're doing the same. But keep in mind that because you're the adult and they're the teenager, your reality is not more important than theirs. Their reality is as important as yours. So if you can manage to find it in you to relate to what they're going through and really come with an open heart, it will really greatly help the connection and the link that you're going to have with your teenager. So this is third. Remember that your reality is not more important than theirs. And dismissing their experience is just going to cut the bridge. The bridge will be cut. They will not be listening to you anymore. So fourth thing, which is supremely important in any relationship, is coherence, or what I would say is between what you say and what you do, it needs to be aligned. If you put on rules that you constantly break in front of your teenager, they're going to know that you're full of BS, right? So you have to be coherent. Coherent is probably the most important thing, and consistency is the most important thing to building trust if you've lost it. So you have to be humble enough to admit when you make a mistake and to admit it clearly in front of your teenager. Admit it when you're wrong. Say you're sorry when you're wrong and really truly mean it, because they can tell the difference. They're old enough that they can say when it's really heartfelt or not. And the fifth component, it was brought up by Brené Brown, and I think is something that's...
I love her.
We all struggle, but we need to keep it coming and reaffirm and relearn how to be vulnerable. Vulnerability is the essence of connection. If you put up the front all the time and you rather be right than be happy, of course, the walls of your teenager will keep up and you will have a very hard time to connect with them.
And my last episode that is actually one of my favorites and one of my most recent episodes that I recorded this year was my interview with Mike Toner. And we talk about the PR forecast, which includes Web 3.0. In this episode, Mike and I talk about how he left his PR 2.0 job and life at Businessweek after 10 years and took a leap of faith out of the corporate world and to the startup world and into Web 3.0. So we talk about the connection between search and social and what that means for Web 3.0 and brands in 2022 and beyond. We talk about buying and selling NFTs, cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, We talk about Bored Apes and Adidas and Nike and how those NFT collaborations really sparked some huge interest in 2021. We talk about some of his projects that he's working on, and he shares some tips on how to start delving into Web 3.0 if you haven't already.
So a typical Web 2.0 shopping experience, and bring that Web 2.0 experience into a 3D world where instead of flipping through a bunch of 2D images, you were and still are able to swirl around, zoom in, see the fibers on the fabric. You don't have to leave, to go back, hit the back button and find a different angle or find a different version. You're literally swirling around a 3D object. And so that's the kind of work that we are doing, is almost bridging this gap, I think, between this Web 2.0 and Web 3 world, which is maybe why I feel so comfortable in it, because I feel like I can straddle both sides of that. We're helping brands create digital twins to walk into the metaverse. Sometimes that looks like a 3D display on a typical product display page. Sometimes that looks like a virtual wearable inside of Decentraland. And our platform allows us to do any and all of that using one version of the product.
My favorite personal tagline is, in the metaverse, I wear Gucci. And yes. I got that from, I wrote an article probably a year ago when Gucci launched with Snapchat, where you could do the try-ons of different shoes and hats and, you know, then go straight to purchase if, you know, you kind of liked how they looked. And, you know, that was, I would say, like, compared to what you're talking about, like the most basic example, but it really makes you, you know, realize like how different that experience is than, like you said, just flipping through like an e-com site and looking at something from different angles and being able to have this, you know, virtual reality, augmented reality, try-in digital experience with brands that you love, or even have your avatar be personalized, you know. And that's, I think, like, when you were talking about being compatible, or, you know, the interoperable.
Yeah,
interoperable. It's a very hard word
there.
But yeah, you want to be able to like walk out of, you know, let's just say, you know, Altspace VR and that avatar and go into, this will probably never be possible, but go into Facebook Horizons with the same avatar, because they'll probably like make it impossible, but who knows, right?
Yeah, and then I think people will create different versions of those identities. And that's where this is kind of, people also recognize that we do show up in different environments. You know, you wear a suit to certain occasions. You might wear something more casual to another occasion. The same is going to be true in these virtual environments. The same is true when we get on Zoom. You know, I use that as kind of the bridge, I think, to get people comfortable. I am not a gamer. I don't go into these worlds all of the time, to at least not to game. But I am finding myself more and more going into them to have business discussions, to have collaboration discussions about projects. That's interesting to me, that I'm not viewing the experience as a game. I'm viewing it as, I don't go into an office anymore. So what better way is there to bring a group of people together if I can't do that? And I sure hope we can one day and things get better. But in the meantime, you know, this is kind of the hand that we've been dealt. Yeah, I had another thought there about just the 3D objects, and you're talking about the immersive shopping experience. I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. When I show them the things that we're working on, and I put my phone in front of them, you know, they immediately know to swirl around it. They're used to it. And my son, for Christmas, said he wanted a sled in case it snows anytime soon. And so I was on Amazon, I'm flipping through these pictures, and I hand him the phone and I'm wanting to see which one he wants. And he starts moving his finger around and it doesn't move. And he expected it to. And that for me is enough of a confirmation that this behavior is very natural once you experience it. Once I put it in your hands and you know it can do that, you're going to start to expect it in any e-commerce or shopping experience, or even more so than that, any experience that you have online, to see it in 3D.
Well, that's a wrap to the most popular podcast episodes on social PR secrets and some of my personal favorites. What will 2022 bring? surely the metaverse is, it continues to develop, and so should your brand focus on what is your metaverse strategy and begin exploring what the metaverse means to you. I'm personally hoping for less burnout and more opportunity to what connects us with joy. You can be sure I'm voting for equal pay, reversing ageism, being a change agent, and tapping into positive energy and the wealth of health and happiness. Thank you so much for tuning into Social PR Secrets this year. And I invite you to continue to subscribe if you haven't already. And if you are interested in things like femaledisruptors.com, please check it out. I invite you to either share with someone you know about the Female Disruptors Virtual Summit or about Social PR Secrets. And I look forward to a successful 2022. Thank you for listening to this episode of Social PR Secrets. If you like what you heard, check out the book on Amazon or follow our blog at socialprsecrets.com. This episode was sponsored by The Buyer Group, a social PR agency striving to keep our balance in the digital world, practicing public relations, social media, and search marketing, while occasionally drinking a glass of wine or two for the best creativity and results. Thank you all for tuning in.